2019. First thing is the approval of the agenda. Mr. Lawson.
Good morning, Mr. President. Good morning, members of council. At this time, there are no recommended changes to today's agenda.
Entertained a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Burton.
Second.
Second, Mr. Riley. Any questions? We'll take the vote. Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Burton?
Yes.
I vote yes. We have the minutes March 19th. Any questions, corrections? Hearing none, they'll stand approved. Correspondence, Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. We have two letters. The first is from Sussex County 4-H Exchange Trip, and the other is for the Cape Henlopen Senior Center, both thanking council for its generosity and donations.
Any correspondence from council? Correspondence from council. Public comment, Mr. Guy. Remind everybody that this is a time for people to come forward and speak to council about something that council has some control over or interest in. You have a three-minute time frame. When you come up and start talking, the green light comes on. At 1 minute, the amber light comes on. And when your 3 minutes is up, the red light comes on. We ask you to stop your speech then. Jim Martin.
Jim Martin, a resident of Georgetown. Because of having lots of rural land in Sussex County, we have a unique opportunity to pilot the construction of the first tiny homes village for our hardworking and exhausted unsheltered neighbors. It would be a promising and cost-effective strategy for rapidly housing some of our most vulnerable county residents, restoring their dignity and putting them back on the path to self-sufficiency. You can see drawings of what tiny homes might look like. Our team has a ton of information with firsthand lived experiences who would help the county every step of the way. We have related experiences opening over 20 sober living group homes all over Delaware. We have opened 3 drop-in centers in Sussex County for the homeless, hungry, and lonely. And all the council members are invited to an event this Saturday at the Shepherd's office for a barbecue chicken lunch. We're just a few blocks from here. Ronald Big Hurt Brittingham will be the barbecue grill master. I know there are residents who have concerns about housing the unsheltered in our community. People are fearful of having these people in our communities. But keep in mind that these people are already in our community right now, on our streets, in our parks, at our stores and restaurants, in wooded areas, in the cars. Every hour outside means the risk of harm increases for these people. We can make the people experiencing homelessness safer and our community safer, cleaner, and more livable if we provide secure housing that they can afford on their low wages. We now have a great team of crockpot people, I call them. I wonder if we could develop a list of ADU, accessory dwelling unit people. Why don't we find a way to build these tiny structures in people's backyards and then rent them out to the working homeless? This could be a way to chip away at Sussex County's affordable housing crisis and the hundreds of unsheltered cases. When I talk to our volunteers and helpers, they always explain to me how they want to do more to help. What do you think of this ADU idea? Our team would love to create and pilot this type of partnership between the county, the homeowners that are interested, and those who are experiencing homelessness. Who else wants to help? I always hear about the not in my backyard people, but I know that there's hundreds of put them in my backyard people. Rents are so high nowadays that people who are able to find a place are spending 70% of their monthly income on housing costs. Can you imagine that? This is at the sacrifice of healthcare, food, clothing, and their children's education and transportation and the other basic necessities. In addition, we believe that sleeping is a human right. Having a place to sleep is also seen by our highest courts as a necessary part of being alive, having liberty, and a part of a citizen's pursuit of happiness. Communities in Sussex County may be violating the U.S. Constitution, I don't know. But by not helping the unsheltered, we have to do our part. We feel that the not in my town and not in my backyard laws violate the rights of the unsheltered. Thank you and have a good day.
Thank you, sir. Paul Rieger.
Good morning. Paul Rieger, 18171 Deer Forest Road, Georgetown. With Board of Adjustments coming through now and on our next agenda having a discussion about the subpoena and other additional business and seem to be discussing it more, Last year, I believe, or the year before, when Mr. Cole was here, it was discussed about having a discussion between council and some Board of Adjustment members and stuff like that going through. And that never seemed to that never matured. But if Board of Adjustments is going to start putting additional business on there, which is an excellent idea, every meeting you hear comes up, well, planning and zoning did this, or the permit, or you didn't read that, or they, somebody made an error, or there wouldn't be a problem having them come in for the variance in most cases. So it might be wise, if their meetings are at 7 o'clock, maybe at an earlier time in the day, start one meeting an hour early, half hour early, whatever it is. But it seems like going through, especially for like these fences and the deck permits, you come in for your permit, they give you the permit. Then it goes to planning and zoning, and you have zoning, the permit, and then the aspect for the construction part of it. It seems like there's a disconnect from the permit to the next stage, to the final on the zoning. And especially what Mr. Kramer brought up too about the hole when they're coming in to inspect the footing. At the last meeting, in this case, is twofold. 12273, a guy came in for a deck. Basically, I believe the footing that he put in for the deck was like a foot and a half from the property line. Now, when the inspector came out to inspect that footing, wouldn't he question so close for requiring a footing within that close to the property line for a structure? It would have, should have just been an obvious question mark as to why is it that close. And especially on a 50-foot lot, if you just looked at the if there was a sketch done on the property with the deck on it, you would know that if it's a 50-foot and you have 5 and 5 inside of the house, it should be a simple catch. How could you even consider putting a deck without a variance? So it's just like a simple fix. There is a disconnect between the three departments that we have with doing the permit. Something is seriously wrong with it that has to be adjusted. Also, too, I made a criticism of, about a month ago when you had Mr. Wright and the other tax assessor speaking about the internet. It just seems what I was talking about was I look at what's being inputted into the website versus being the prettiest. I would rather have one that works correctly than the prettiest. But even in that case 12273, when I went to look it up today to refresh for the setbacks and see that I was correct, the parcel information, even on the web page to get there, was wrong. It took me to nowhere on the map. So there is a problem. And if it's not plugged in right, which is human error, it causes an error going through.
Thank you. Patricia Cookson.
My name is Patricia Cookson. I am homeless. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry, I'm trying to get emotional. I've been homeless since September last year. And I've tried so hard to get housing for myself, try to get a job for myself. But I'm homeless and I live in a car with my dog. And people say, oh, give up your dog. I can't. She's my emotional support animal because I suffer from what's called atypical bipolar. And so my psychiatrist says I need to have her. Every time I try to get into housing, I either cannot afford it or they tell me that we don't allow dogs. And I finally got a psychiatrist who's going to give me my letter saying that she's my emotional support animal. My problem is I can't afford the rent here. Even a room, to rent is astronomical. It's like between $500 and $800 just for a room to rent. That's not even an apartment. And I cannot afford that with the cost of taking care of her, taking care of me, and whatever else that comes up. And to have these tiny houses would be such a big part. I didn't ask to be homeless. But it happened. And I fear for my life every night. And I gotta sleep in my car. And I wish somebody would help us. I went to social services pleading for a hotel voucher. What do I get? Well, since you collect SST and SSI, we cannot give you a hotel voucher for 30 days. Why is that? I need to know why I cannot get to a hotel considering I am disabled with a dog. I find out from one person that's because I have a car. Social Services considers a car a house if you're homeless. And that's just not right. If that's the case, then they need to have a program that help us with gas. Because you won't believe how much gas our car can burn up for bringing the heat to keep warm during the winter or keep cool in the summer. It's just not right. But please, I'm begging you, help us. All this farmland that gets built up with these big houses in these big communities, can you not just put one farmland aside for tiny houses? It would help us so much. Because all of us do not want to be like this. We want to step up to better ourselves. If we have place, we can better ourselves and we can go up higher. But right now, we're stuck on ground level. So please, I'm begging you all. Please, just help us in this. I'd really appreciate it. Thank you so very much, you all. Thank you.
Thank you. Kathy Martin.
My name's Kat. I'm Jim Martin's wife. My name is Kat. I'm John Stinger's daughter. Some of you might know John Stinger. John Stinger is an activist. He was a teacher. He's retired now. He's in his 90s. And he taught me to speak up for what I believe is right. For as long as I've been old enough to speak about it, I have advocated for homeless people. I have an interest in history and our government. I've had the opportunity to travel overseas, and as a young adult, I traveled to India. I saw firsthand with my own eyes what it's like to live in a third world country. I lived in India for a month where untouchables lived on the streets. I saw poverty that brought tears to my eyes and tremendous hurt to my heart. I wake up every day thanking God that I live in the United States of America.
Amen.
Where we have the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Where we are free. And I thank God that we do not have people who are called untouchables and who will remain so until they're somehow reincarnated. I thank God we do not live in a caste system, and I do not see a protected cow walking on the road. We have a constitution in America that protects our citizens. If we as communities do not uphold the rights of homeless people and we continue to ignore the plight of the poor, then we will see more tents and more beggars. Our country will look more and more like a third world country. If you see me here begging, just like I saw the beggars doing in India, I'm standing here begging you and speaking for the ones who have no voices. I'm standing here saying, please, please put this important topic on your agenda. We have a housing crisis, and this is an emergency.
Thank you. Mary Ann Clayton.
Good morning. My name is Mary Ann Clayton. I am a retired forensic pathologist from New Jersey, and I've been living in Delaware for the past 8 years. I am here to speak this morning about the CHEER program and Meals on Wheels in particular. I've been a Meals on Wheels volunteer for the past 5 or 6 years, and every month I deliver meals about 6 or 8 times to different on 3 different routes in the area here. I'm sure that you have or will hear other speeches about the Meals on Wheels program, and I think it's quite obvious that the nutritional value of the program speaks for itself. So I'm here actually to speak a little bit about the other half of the equation. There's a meal that's prepared at the CHEER Center, and the volunteer staff delivers it out to the people that are homebound and need our services. I'm here to talk a little bit about the volunteer or the personal aspect. And I have to say that is really been very enjoyable for me. I think it's also important not only to understand that the people that we serve need the nutritional value of the meals, but they also appreciate the person-to-person interaction that they have on a daily basis with the volunteers. And many of us don't just come to the door and hand the meal over. Many of us will take time to say, how are you today? Is there anything I can help you with? I can't tell you how many garbage bags I've been asked to take out to the dumpster, and I'm happy to do it because some of the seniors are unable to do so, and I feel that's part of my job, and I'm happy to do it for them. I also wanted to point out that many of us, because we visit the same clients maybe every week or every other week, we get to know them on a personal basis, and we are able to assess when they have needs such as medical issues or perhaps safety concerns. And many times I have brought that back to the attention of the cheer staff when I visited someone and they just didn't seem right, or they were complaining about something and I thought that they might need nurse's attention or a doctor's visit, and at times we've even precipitated a hospitalization for them because their condition has been so serious. I thought I might tell you about one gentleman that I went to his house to deliver a meal one morning. I found him collapsed outside his front door. He had been out there overnight. He was still somewhat responsive to me, but I immediately called 911. To make a long story short, he ended up in the hospital for several weeks, and after that he was back on my route. One gentleman in particular is very special to us. He's a veteran. And when we first started coming to his house, he would just open the door, let us take the meal, and just exchange a few pleasantries. As we got to know him better, I remember one day going to the house, and he was so exuberant, which was very unusual for him, and he invited us into his apartment. And he wanted to tell us that he had just received some sort of certificate saying that he was eligible for burial in the Veterans Cemetery. He was absolutely elated because I guess that had been a concern on his mind. After that, we developed an even stronger relationship with him. He invited us in to do puzzles with him, etc. He passed away a couple of months ago, and several of us went to his memorial service. So the Meals on Wheels program is good not only for nutrition for this, for the body, but also the interaction is good nutrition for the soul. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Gregory Lake. Gregory Lake.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Greg Lake, and I am from Harrington, Delaware, but I actually live outside of Smyrna now. I've been all over the United States, and I know what the situation is as far as homeless. When I was a kid, we was homeless. My mom raised us four kids by herself, so going house to house, house to house. Delaware, I've been finding, is way behind schedule. We're supposed to be the first state of the United States, the first state. Why are we behind all the other states? California, Arizona, everybody comes here and put businesses here and go to their state and make money. Delaware ain't making no money off of it. I know a lot of companies got Delaware registrations, but their businesses is in other states. Homeless is bad. There's no jobs out here. When you catch a felony, I have two felonies and all that stuff. The only thing that saved me is because I don't beg. I don't like to ask nobody for nothing. So I ended up starting my own businesses. And now I have six. But I had to go through the prison system. I had to go through being homeless. I had to go through all kinds of crazy stuff, and it's bad. Every time I get out of the car, just because people know me and see what I have now, they ask for money. Every time I turn around, somebody asks for money. It's dangerous for a lot of people. They're getting robbed in Dover big time, New Street and Queen Street and all these bad streets up in Dover. I can't speak for down here, but I can speak for up there. I see it all the time. I went in different states, and what they did for their homeless people, excuse me, is out in Arizona, they got Tent City, where I was thinking about doing that here. Open up, build a big tent, and then put homeless people in a tent. Create jobs for them, which I have ways of creating over 20,000 jobs in Delaware by itself with my own manufacturing plant to put people to work and give them an opportunity. That means everybody. So no one's left out. Color, race, gender, doesn't matter what it is, no one should be left out. We're in America. We're in the first state. Why don't we act like we're in the first state? All the other states are ahead of us as far as Arizona, California. I've been all over the United States. I've been in other countries. I've seen so much, and I've learned a lot from being around different states and being around different people. That's why I know what I know, and I brought it back to Delaware. Now I know how to reinvent Delaware. But I don't want to do it by myself, of course. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to be a hero. I want to be a hero to people that are in need. I don't want to be a hero, or I don't want to be famous or anything like that. But anyway, I got the world's first flavored baby pacifiers coming out, and this is how I'm going to create my jobs with pacifiers, flavored pacifiers, smart pacifiers. They come with built-in tracking units in them. They come with cameras in them. And all that stuff for futuristic stuff, so that way kids get kidnapped or anything like that. If someone's around your child, you can be at work, you can go to Google, you can check your child, you can see who's around your kid, you can put this tracking unit in the trunk, whatever. But anyway, I have a way to change the system around where we can start with the youth, because the youth is our future, and if we don't change the youth now, 20 years from now, it's going to be worse than it is now, because I see these youngsters now, all they're doing is killing themselves, hurting people, robbing people. When people get desperate.
Close up.
Yes. People get desperate, what are they going to do? So I want to thank you for your time, and you guys have a blessed day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dan Kramer.
My name is Dan Kramer. I know I'm going to stir the pot today, and a whole hell is going to break loose, but that's fine and dandy because I got broad shoulders. But I'm going to tell you something, this homeless garbage is exactly that. First of all, everybody wants to complain, oh, well, we can't afford this and we can't afford that, but they sure want to come in here and gimme, gimme, gimme. Well, wait a minute. There's no excuse in this world that they can't afford to buy a house. Why not? Well, we can't afford to pay over $800 a month. Well, guess what? There's houses available for a whole lot less than that for sale. In fact, just go on the computer and look. All over this Sussex County, there's houses for anywhere from $25,000, $30,000. It's not what the problem with it is. Well, I don't want to live there. Well, guess what? They live in the woods. But don't complain, because the houses are available. And it might be a fixer-upper. And furthermore, most of these houses you can get payments won't be anywhere as close to that. Because in all my life, we bought a brand new trailer. And I've never paid more than a little over $300 a month in anything I've ever bought. And I'll tell you what, I can't afford $800 a month. Oh, the state would say, oh, you can afford $700,000, $800,000, $900,000. No, I can't. But that's up to me, because I don't plan on having put my neck out there that deep. But there's absolutely no excuses that these guys can't afford to buy a house on their own at $25,000, $30,000. But they got to be able to go in there and keep it clean and do their stuff. But if they don't want to haul the trash, and guess what? Hey, somebody told me yesterday, well, it costs $7 a week for trash. That's a big bunch of bull there is. Because I just hauled my trash for 3 weeks, $1. So I don't want to hear this garbage. But it takes time to do it so that you recycle and everything else. And now, the next question is, this here senior citizen stuff, they want to us to give them $400,000. Well, I'll put it this way to you. I used to go occasionally eat a meal. That is some of the worst meals I've ever eaten in my life. And they want $400,000 of our tax dollars, bull cookies.
Thank you, sir. Robert Viscount.
Robert Viscount, Lewis, Delaware. First of all, thanks for listening to everybody's problems. During the past 2 years, I've been involved in several land use matters that adversely affect my residential community. that abuts Savannah Road and Old Orchard Road. My comments today relate to the information provided by DelDOT's Drew Boyce during Council's meeting last week. The agenda topic was Sussex County and DelDOT coordination. I appreciate your attention. During the meeting, Mr. Boyce explained that because DelDOT is a home rule state, DelDOT is required to provide road access to a land parcel based on the use that the county approved. If DelDOT fails to do so, they run the risk of paying compensable damages or getting sued. This motivates DelDOT to provide roadway access regardless of the collateral traffic problems that are created. This is problematic. I'm disappointed to learn that DelDOT, as the county's agent, has no authority to mandate road improvements, but rather negotiates such improvements to be paid by the developer. And this negotiation occurs outside the purview of the county. This is very problematic. Compounding all of this is the lack of a concurrency requirement. I learned that this means that if the negotiated roadway improvements do not achieve a minimum service level, DelDOT will still allow the development to move forward. This is bewilderingly problematic. Finally, DelDOT does not operate with a county mandate or any legislative authority to maintain minimum levels of service on roads. And their traffic models are intersection-centric, meaning they do not consider other traffic issues that occur between intersections. A couple of examples, they omit traffic volumes and they do not consider road capacity. So while DelDOT's traffic model might run all night as described by Mr. Boyce, it's missing some pretty fundamental variables. Why would Sussex County ever approve a land use change without understanding and addressing the traffic issues, especially when a TIS, a traffic impact study, is required? By design, the multiple gaps and omissions that I previously noted allow this to happen. In short, the process is severely flawed. I ask Council to expeditiously consider the following for all Sussex County land use matters when a TIS is required. This is blocking and tackling stuff. Before rendering a decision, require land use decision makers to review and fairly consider the final TIS. Obtain a high level of confidence that the required roadway improvements are adequate. Empower DelDOT to develop and adhere to improved minimum level of service requirements for Sussex County roads. Adopt the principle that road improvements recommended by DelDOT are non-negotiable. Require developers to fund all roadway improvements. Understand the cumulative traffic impacts from all projects occurring or planning to occur in the same area as the individual project being evaluated.
If you could kind of close up here.
I'm done. Require DelDOT to upgrade the traffic criteria used in their traffic models, and most importantly, come to a self-actualization. Denying a land use change or roadway access solely because traffic and roadway issues cannot be satisfactorily resolved should be an acceptable outcome. Thank you for the opportunity, and I'm available and willing to work with you or your staff on this matter or answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Ross, Administrator's Report.
Thank you, Mr. President. Administrator's Report for March 26, 2019, item number one. Delaware State Police year-to-date activity report for February 2019 is attached, listing the number of violent crime and property crime arrests, as well as total traffic charges and corresponding arrests. In addition, DUI and total vehicle crashes investigated are listed. In total, there were 191 troopers assigned to Sussex County for the month of February. Item 2, per the attached Engineering Department fact sheet, the following projects have received substantial completion. Bay Forest Club Phase 5.2 construction record effective March 18th. Bishop's Landing, formerly Dove Landing, Phase 1A effective March 21st. Bishop's Landing, formerly Dove Landing, Phases 1B and 1C effective March 21st. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Jennings.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of Council. I have the quarterly pension update to discuss today. There's two items that I'd like to discuss. The first is the quarterly performance summary, and that would be as of December 31st. And then we had an experience study done for our actuarial assumptions. So moving on to the first part is our performance summary. And again, this is as of the fourth quarter, so June 31st. The market value was at $100 million. We saw a loss of 7.2% in the fourth quarter. But what I want you to note, down in orange underneath the tables, you can see as of February 28th, I took a snapshot, and we had gained back pretty much all of what we lost in the fourth quarter so far as of February 28th. Moving on to the OPEB, the benefits fund, market value 41%. Again, we saw a large decline at 8.2%. And again, a snapshot as of February 28th, we had the balance is back to $44 million. So at this time, because there's a lot of changes going on in the market, I did ask Mr. Michael Schoen to be here from Marquette & Associates just to give you an idea of what's happening in the market today and take any of your questions. Mr. Schoen.
Morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
So if you want to put that on a three-minute, Gina likes it when I'm real brief, put that three-minute ticker on there for me. So. Let's start with the economy. We've had sustained growth over the last 10 years, and then growth ticked up a little bit in the second quarter of last year, increasing at a rate of better than 4% per year on real GDP, driven primarily, we believe, by the tax cuts. And it's back down to now more than a 2.5% year-over-year return real GDP. We've continued to have low inflation. Last year inflation was 1.9%. Over the last 3 years it's been 2%. And over the last 10 years it's been 1.8%, which is, for those of us with enough of this or none of this.
Or lack of.
Or lack of, yeah. Exactly. Remember the 70s and early 80s when it was much higher than that. The Fed's goal is to keep it right around that 2%, and that has happened very consistently over the last 10 years. We have low unemployment, earnings are positive, interest rates are low, but have went up some last year, but there's no expected Fed fund rate hikes this year, which is different than what was being talked about last year, which we think was part of what precipitated the downturn in fourth quarter, but also has helped rally things back that basically, as Gina showed you, all that was lost in fourth quarter has been gained back in so far for this quarter. For the equity markets, over the last 10 years, they've had an annual average return to the U.S. Stock market of 13.2%, which is just historically almost unprecedented. The average usually is around about 9 or 10 for the stock market, and Sussex County has benefited significantly by that with their, you know, the part they have in equities in their portfolio. Last year, the equity market was down 5.2%. It was a tale of two stories, as I like to say. First half of the year was relatively flat, up about a little bit over 3%. Third quarter, actually the stock market was up over 7%, but then fourth quarter was down almost 15%. But year to date, it's back up 12.6%. So over that whole time period, it actually has been positive, even with the fourth quarter significant downturn. And just as a point also, in 2017, the stock market was up over 21%, okay? And that's really about all I have, so.
Questions of council? Mr. Riley.
Of course. First of all, thank you for coming up here from Florida.
Sure.
Doug was just down in Florida, and I'm sure you'd rather be in the sunshine. We've had good performance. We've had good performance, but the market's done well. We've benefited from that. But I guess the questions and concerns I would have is, you know, we can look in the rearview mirror and say that was good, but where are we going from here, you know? And we had a rate inversion last week. Market reacted to that. You said corporate profits are looking fairly good right now. You know, what's the projections there? And if you could talk a little bit about, you know, what what would the response be, what would the plan be, you know, if the economy does start to get into some rocky territory and the market does go sideways or down? I mean, how do we react? How quickly do we react? What do we, what would your recommend and recommendations tend to be in an environment like that?
Okay, take the clock off.
Take the clock off, that's right, I know. But we're talking, you know, we're talking a lot of money here, and, you know, our ability to meet our future obligations, you know, is dependent upon not only keeping that money, not losing it, but also maintain a certain rate of growth. So what do you see going forward, and how would you react, you know, if we got into a recession?
Okay, so I thought about it and figured I might get a question along those lines.
Yeah.
And I thought about it, I said, I would, if I may tell a quick story, if you're driving down the road, you see clouds off into the horizon, you know, the first reaction is say, okay, I know when it rains, there's always clouds out there. But when there's clouds out there, it doesn't always rain. And the reason I mention that is every time there's been a recession, there's been a rate inversion. But every time there's been a rate inversion, there hasn't necessarily been a recession. In fact, there's been periods of times in which the stock market, and I'll reference like 2006, there at the end of 2005, there was, and a rate inversion means short-term rates are higher than long-term rates. And I would actually say, I'm not even really sure that I would say there's a rate inversion right now. They're actually fairly level. They're quite
close.
Flat.
They're very close.
They're very close, yeah. Yes. And actually the 10 and the 2 actually are not inverted yet. So, but let's say it's fairly flat. But if I'm driving down the road and I see the, you know, the clouds here, make note that, and I say, okay, so, you know, it might rain, but, you know, how soon is it going to rain? How much is it going to rain? And do I start slowing up, you know, take my foot off the pedal a little bit right now? Now, if I'm driving down the road at 70 miles an hour, yeah, I might just back it off a little bit, maybe back down to 68 or something like that, and just monitor what's happening. But your plan, which although it's targeted at 65%, actually when you think of the implementation...
65% equities.
65% equities, thank you. When you peel that back, your bonds are very, very conservatively managed, and part of your stocks are in what are known as low vol funds, which are designed to protect low volatility, better protection in down markets. So your risk profile is more like a 63% equity portfolio. Same time, the actuary, and you're going to talk about this a little bit later on, has set certain return assumptions, you know, and to get to those return assumptions, okay, you really need to be at about 65% equities as a long-term strategic allocation. Otherwise, the actuary will have to lower the return assumptions, which lowers your funded ratio, which would increase the required actuarially determined contribution. So it's finding, as you had mentioned, find that fine line between growth and protection.
Right.
So if you were, as I say, if you were driving at 70 miles an hour, I'd say, let's back it off a little bit. Since you're already driving at 63 miles an hour, one is I don't know that I would back it off any right now, because not every time there's a rate inversion is there. Yeah. Secondly, 40% of your money is with the state. And the state actually invests their piece probably a tad more aggressively than the other 60%. They actually target 60% equities, but they always have been at 65. They've always had what you call risk on. Well, I talked to them, actually, I called them yesterday, talked to them this morning. They said they actually have backed off a little bit. They actually have moved about 4% from equity into fixed, okay? Now, you might say,
fixed income being bonds.
Being bonds, sorry, right. Yes, thank you. It's bonds, and actually bonds and cash. We've
okay.
done half and half. And so you might say, well, why not do that with the rest? Because the state was driving down the road at a faster speed than the rest of your money, the rest of your, you know, the other piece. They've just sort of backed it back down to the overall. So I think right now, you're probably at a good spot balancing this needing to have a 65% target, otherwise these other ramifications. I'd also make mention that if you start saying, well, let's, maybe we should go down to 60 or 55, you have to be right twice. You have to know when to get out, and you have to get when to get back in.
Time the market, which nobody can do.
You're right. So right now, and I guess the last piece I'd mention of all my clients, and I will reference Lancaster County as one of my clients, and you know just by the reputation, very conservative county, you are the most conservatively invested of all of them. And I have 17 clients, 13 public funds, 11 of them counties throughout Delaware, Pennsylvania, and Maryland. You're still the most conservative even right now. So I would do nothing right now and watch.
Were you at the meeting? They didn't have any results on the performance of the state's portfolio. Yeah. Were you able to find that out?
Well, we actually had the reported returns from fourth quarter. Some of their returns actually are lagged because they have some holdings that it takes a quarter to get returns on. Those we won't get till the end of March. So there will always be not lag on the total portfolio, but lag on some of them. I think the other issue that was asked was getting the x-ray of the portfolio, right, or the underlying holdings. They said they will not give that out. So they will give the underlying who the managers are, what the asset allocations are, but not like we have X number of Microsoft stocks and things like that.
Right, because my concern with that is obviously you get a lot of overlap, you know, and you could end up holding a lot more of a particular company than what you might think you own.
Yeah. And if it's a good stock, that's good.
But even the best stocks sometimes, you know.
True.
I mean, ask General Motors, right? I mean.
True. So we can peel apart the OPEB fund totally for you, and the other part, that the other 60% we can. The other part we can, it's just not available. They won't provide that information.
And I don't know how much time we've allotted for this. I don't want to impose on the council, but I mean, what is the philosophy behind having 40% of our money with the state's fund? I mean, as opposed to just doing it ourselves.
I think initially, you had 100%, and then you backed it down to, I forget what number it was, and then 50, and then recently 40. You know, I'd say the value of the state fund is it can give you some diversification into asset classes that you would not be able to get into.
Because of the size of their portfolio, they can invest in things that we don't have enough money to get into.
Exactly. On the other hand, they generally invest more aggressively, I think, in total, generally, than you, that Sussex County has been comfortable with. So what we do is we look at that 40%, we say, okay, how do we take that other 60% so the combination fits your more, they're not wildly aggressive, you know, for a state fund, but for a county fund, it's probably a little bit more aggressive. So we counterbalance that with, as I say, Wilmington Trust manages your bonds, their treasuries and high-grade corporates, you have the low-vol funds. So we work to get it sort of, I think, where your comfort zones would be. So there's some positives and some negatives. And the cost, I will say, the cost structure there used to be very much higher than yours. That has come down rather considerably.
Their cost structure.
Theirs has come down. Still not as inexpensive as the other piece, but and some of that, I'd say it's justifiable because of the types of things that they get into, like some private equity and things like that, and real estate that are going to be more expensive.
Yeah. And I'll mention it. Originally, I think I had a little misunderstanding as far as what we were paying cost-wise, but we finally got to the real number, and it's, I think we're paying a very fair number, very fair. I mean, so question though, do we anticipate a time in the near future where we're going to have a significant uptick in the number of people that are pulling from the fund? We're going to see on the horizon a number of people retiring and taking their pension and a more significant drain on the assets.
Right. So that's what the second part, when we get into the actuary assumptions,
so
we talk about the retirement rates and things like that. And that those assumptions are what you use to make sure we keep it funded correctly and healthy, because
right,
we look at our trends and the ages and the years of service to come up with those assumptions.
Because right now we're banking on a 7% return, which over the long haul is a pretty fair number. Probably a conservative number, but it's definitely fair. And I'm just wondering, what if we got into a real extended period of economic headwinds where we're only seeing 5%? And what impact would that have on our ability to meet our obligations?
Correct. And that's why all these assumptions play in the play. So when we get to where I'm making a recommendation to lower it from 7.25% to 7%, how much that costs. But if we have to lower it a whole percentage, say 6.25%, that's $2 million more annually into our pension fund that we'd have to do.
Right.
So, And what happens is each year, the actuary looks at how did we meet those assumptions. And if we met them, great, we don't have to contribute more next year. But if we don't, then they amortize that loss that we have over multiple years, and it has to go back into the pension fund. So that's why we have this, these studies done.
Yeah. Good stuff.
One of the other things I think you really truly should commend yourselves for, only client that I have, and I think one of the few in the country, that when you have excess funds, you put this money, you put more money in the good times to protect your better in the down times. And that is so important. So many will try to, in the good times, put less in, and then they're really hammered. So, you know, truly, I'd say the highest level of prudence of anybody I deal with. So.
Thank you.
Jenny's right to keep us in that path.
Okay, I'm going to move on to actuary assumptions.
So what percentage are we paying? What percentage do we pay this bank? What
percentage do we pay him?
We pay, the fee is approximately one basis point. The question was how much is the fee, and it's approximately one basis point or 0.1%, which, you know, a typical portfolio for an investor, for anybody in this room, would probably be at least 1%. So it's a, you know, we have a lot of money invested there. So in real dollars, it's not a trivial sum, but it's a very, very fair sum, in my experience. So.
Thank you.
We're not. It's not $100. It's not $100 million, right?
No. We're not. We have approximately $100 million in the fund, and so we are paying about $100,000 a year in fees. Mm-hmm. But. There's a lot of expertise that goes into managing $100 million, and so we're paying for expertise.
I understand. I have trouble managing a commodity market.
Well, yeah, corn, you never know what the rain's going to do, right?
Who knows if the bins are going to bust or not.
That's right.
So as I was mentioning, it would be prudent that we do an experience study every 5 years, look where our assumptions are, what these that we're using, and how our pension fund is actually reacting. So we had them done this year, and there are 8 assumptions that get looked at. There's demographic assumptions and economic assumptions. And I'm going to go through each assumption that we're recommending changing, and you'll notice recommending changes in everything except the inflation rate. So for each assumption, it's going to have an impact on our liability, how much, you know, we project out there that we owe the pensioners when they retire, and our contribution impact. So that's the annual budget dollar amount that it gets affected. So moving on to mortality rates first. So we use a mortality improvement table 2014. They're recommending go to the next current table. What's happening here is the table that was established in 2014 assumed people were living longer. However, we're living longer, but not as long as they thought we were going to live. So this is a good thing. When you see negative numbers, that's a good thing. So
it's a good thing for the pension.
Well, I'm not talking. Yeah. Sorry. This is. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So yes, liability impact is going down. That's a pension good, people not. Sorry, actuary assumptions. So retirement rates, no change to the 35-hour employees, but change to paramedic and dispatchers. So we had changed that recently that people could retire. We added the 5 extra years, didn't know how it was gonna work out. So looking at our experience, right now we assume 100% people retire once they hit 65. Well, that's not accurate. We actually have people retiring under the age of 55. So the recommendation is change it from 0% retire under 55 to 30%, and 100% retire from 64 to 60, 50%, and then anybody over 65, that's 100%. So that would be the new assumption. So what's that doing? That's employees are retiring sooner than we thought. So that means they're pulling down on our pension more than we thought they would. So that is more of an impact to our liability, more impact to the annual contribution during the budget. Termination rate. So our assumption used to look at gender, age, and years of service. And that's not accurate. Our termination rates, and this is whether you retire, you know, you voluntarily, you go and you terminate your service. This doesn't mean that we're terminating anybody. Ours look like they vary more by years of service. So the longer you have, most likely you're going to move on. That has, when we change those assumptions, you can see that has an impact where it increases both of our pension and OPEB liability, therefore increases our contribution. Marriage assumption. So we had an assumption that 70% of males are married and 55% of females are married. Well, it doesn't matter if you're male or female. In our demographic, 65% of all members are married. Has a very small impact, but it is to the benefit of our pension. This does not affect the OPEB. That's why I don't see OPEB here. OPEB has to do with health insurance. Pension, it matters here because if you pass away, your spouse gets half your pension. So that's why it only affects the pension side. Salary increases vary by age. Used to be the old assumption. The way you look at our statistics, it's based off of years of service. That has the impact just on pension. Again, OPEB has nothing to do with salaries, so it doesn't affect the OPEB side. This one's a large change, and this is for the better for our pension fund. Our current assumption is that the pensioners get a COLA of 1.4%. It's recommended it's 1%. We looked at 5 years, it was 0.739, 10 years, 0.984. Going back to 1998, you can see the average, we've never hit that 1%. So we're okay and very comfortable lowering that to 1%. And this goes on to what we were just talking about with Mr. Schoen and the assumed rate of return. What do we expect our investments to get? And I do think it would be prudent that we do lower it. Our current is 7.25%, and the recommendation is to lower it 7%. If you look at a study with pension funds across the United States, the average or the median assumption is 7.33%. If I look at within the state of Delaware, 7%, Newcastle County, 7%, and Kent County, 7.5%. And with 40% in the state of Delaware, it does make sense that we would be aligned with the state of Delaware. This does have an increase because we are lowering that we're not going to get as much from the market that we expected. So this does have a large liability impact and a contribution impact. So with all that said, how's this affect overall? So with the pension, what I did was you take what our liability is based off the actuary study for 2018. It was 110 million. We were at 85.4% funded ratio. How much do we contribute annually to our budget? 3.7. So I took each of the assumptions, what each change makes, how it changes the funding ratio, and how our contribution gets changed. So the way the numbers work out here, we actually increase our funded ratio by less than 1%, but we increase our contribution impact $160,000. It's not too much, but it's the way each affects the contribution versus the liability, how it works out. And then moving on to the OPEB, the baseline was 53 million. We actually see an increase in our liability impact. So our funded ratio goes down to 77.9%, and then we do see about a $300,000 increase into our annual budget. The reason you're seeing more of a drastic change is if you remember back here on the pension, the biggest change that helped us was the COLA, which doesn't affect the OPEB side. So I do have a motion. This is a recommendation both from our actuary and our pension committee, and at the appropriate time, I have the motion.
We'll read your motion, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Be it moved that the Sussex County Council, based on the recommendation of the pension committee and Chiron, the county's actuary, change the following assumptions used during the pension and OPEB annual actuary studies, where applicable. 1, update the mortality improvement scale to MPE 2018. Number 2, update the retirement assumption for paramedics and dispatchers. Number 3, update the termination assumption to a service-based table. Number 4, change the marriage assumption to 65% of all members assumed to be married. Number five, change the COLA assumption to 1%. Number six, change the salary scale assumption to be service-based. Number seven, change the discount rate to 7%.
Pleasure, Council.
I'll make the motion.
I don't think
motion, Mr. Riley. I'm sorry.
Wait, I'll second.
No, motion, Mr. Riley. Second, Mr. Wilson. Questions on the motion?
I don't think we had enough time to discuss what you really put before us. I didn't get here before, and I should ask you, how many employees are we hiring now? How many employees does the state of Delaware have? Not state, but Sussex County have. How many employees?
We have full-time around 500.
500?
Yeah.
So we're the same place where...
We have not increased this last budget. I think we had a net of one between people, positions that we were eliminating and going up.
We're about the same place we were.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. I had another question written down. I almost forgot it. So we're about five. We're up to 500 instead of, so now since we're doing well, so why should we? Why should we pay people to retire?
Well, this was an agreement that when people are hired, that's what's given.
After COVID, Mike and I came on this council. We decided we were about broke. We couldn't hardly make our expenses. So we decided to let people retire them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided to here we are today taking more money. So I can't understand why we're doing this.
So
I think we have a legal obligation to
we do
pay a pension.
Well, it might be illegal to people that came on now and said, well, if we change them, why can't we change it now? How come it's legal for us to do it then?
Well, what we did, what you're talking about, Sam, I think back then we allowed people to take an early retirement.
That's true.
To get them off the salary payroll.
That's
into
true.
The pension system.
Yes.
Did that twice, I think, in like 2 years. But
so
now this is what our obligation would be to the people who are already retired and or are going to retire, that are county employees. We have an obligation to pay them a pension when they retire.
So we're encouraging those to retire.
We're encouraging them. We're saying that if you do retire, there's a pension for you.
That was our purpose back then, to encourage people to retire.
Correct. To get them off of a salaried payroll.
To cut back the spending.
To cut back on salary, yes.
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 So
put them on the pension.
So we save a little money.
So we don't pay them the same rate pension as they are making it into working.
So I don't know if we shouldn't go back the old way. Why should we stay where we're at? Why should?
Well, I don't know that we would need to have an early retirement, because obviously we need the 500 employees we had today to conduct business.
Right.
If you also remember back then when we did that,
we was 550.
We were at 550 employees, and the economy had taken a deep dive this way.
That's correct.
Now it's come back up, and now there's more construction work, more housing being built, more inspections being conducted.
I just saw up here that we lost how much money on our investments. You said. Was it my sign put in front of that?
Correct, but we have gained it back
this
last quarter. Right.
So don't jump overboard and say, no.
And I think that's why they've done all this research and assumption with actuarials and our investment people to say this is what you should be doing to make.
Well, it's hard for me to make a decision on something when they run by me this fast. I mean, wouldn't it be a little hard for you, IG, if you're going to make it, if you look it over? I mean, I haven't sat in this budget committee at all. And I did see where some money's been spent in the budget committee that I thought didn't need to be spent there, and I only spent maybe 10 minutes there. You heard me talk about that, Jana.
Yeah, so this is separate from the budget. So our actuary has to do a study to make sure that the assumptions that they're using are correct, because otherwise I would get an audit comment from the auditor saying, your liability is not correct on the books. We can't go by that. So I have to do this and have a study done. So the actuary brought it to the pension committee to say, we need to change these assumptions because we need to make sure your liability is correctly stated in your financial statements. So the pension committee heard, the actuary was here, pension committee is making the recommendation. As far as the budget, we can change things in the budget, but this, it just shows what the liability is, and then the actuary uses that liability to come up with what we should, to sustain our pension, what we need to put in our pension fund.
I understand that, but more.
Okay, good.
And we're relying on our staff, obviously. I think we all agree does a very good job, and the committee. to do all this. So they spend a lot of time at it, much more than we spend at it, you're correct.
Maybe that's why we're elected. Sorry, give a little direction.
There you go.
How they are to spend money.
There you go.
It's taxpayers' money after all.
That's a fact, of which we all remember that.
I've been on that poor road a few times myself.
I will say this, if I may. I did sit through the committee meeting. I didn't participate, but I did sit and listen and observe, and I did read the handouts in detail, and I think they're good recommendations. I think it's prudent, it's conservative, and it's going to keep us on track.
Thank you, sir. Any more questions? We will take the vote.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
Mr. Burton.
Yes.
I vote yes. Thank you, Mrs. Jennings.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Schoen.